I'm Lauren Layfield, and you're listening to Your Next Podcast. This is the podcast that brings you a different series every single week, helping you to find your new favourite show. I have got such a little gem for you this week. This is the brand new season of Waterlands, a British Podcast Award nominated show that talks about exactly what you might expect, Waterlands and all of the wonderful things that live there. This third series is all about rivers, hence the big eel on the cover art there, and our host Megan McCubbin is going to be travelling all across the rivers of the UK, looking at the crucial role they play in maintaining ecological balance. This season, she's also setting out to learn about the rich history of rivers and how they've shaped human culture over the centuries. Enjoy! This is lovely. This is Waterlands.
It's like a trampoline.
A trampoline.
Or like...
like a waterbed.
Like a waterbed,
if anyone still has any of those anymore,
yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly. And you can see the movement of water underneath as you move.
Let's give that a go. Where do you think is a good spot?
Over just here. I think we might be able to get it.
Oh, look, you can see it moving.
So you can see as I jump up and down.
You do. It does wobble.
Yeah. Here we go. See?
Wow.
And that's a pretty amazing feeling. Of actually how fluid this landscape actually is.
Welcome to Waterlands, a series brought to you by WWT. I'm Megan McCubbin, and in this series, I'll be taking you on a journey along some of the most fascinating and vital wetland habitats on our planet, rivers. Imagine standing at the source of a river. What do you see? Is there such a thing? Perhaps it's a trickle of meltwater from a glacier, or a bubbling spring emerging from the earth. Would it have moved if you came back a year or even a season later? In this episode of Waterlands, we're going to the source of the River Thurso in Scotland. The area is known as the Flow Country, and it also just happens to be the biggest expanse of blanket bog in the world. I met up with Millie Revel Hayward, Campaigns and Communications Officer for the RSPB in Scotland.
Millie, this place is just mind-blowing. It is huge. I mean, you've got the mountains on one horizon and then you turn around, it goes from horizon to horizon. I've never seen a bog like this before.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I think that's one of the amazing things about this place is the sense of scale you get. It is the biggest expanse of blanket bog in the world.
How big actually is it?
So we're in RSPB Forsonard Flows at the moment at the reserve, and our reserve is around 21,000 hectares, but that is just a small part of the flow country, and that's what it's named for, because the word flow comes from the Norse flow, meaning watery, boggy. And it stretches across the north of Scotland, across Caithness and Sutherland, about 400,000 hectares. So
Wow. Massive,
absolutely huge. And that's over from kind of Thurso in the east, over to Durness in the west, and down to Lairg. So
there is just water everywhere. We're looking out onto a pool system, aren't we? And there's lots of different pools, different shapes and sizes. But I'm guessing there is a lot of movement of water in this habitat.
I mean, it's the most important thing here. It is what makes the blanket bog a bog, because as water falls, it is absorbed like a big sponge, and then it flows through the landscape very slowly. It will pool in these intricate pool systems, and they're incredible. They're something you don't really know they're there until you're right on top of them, and suddenly you're lost in a maze of these sparkling, amazing pools. And they're all interconnected. And then you have streams, and lots of these are really important catchment areas for species like salmon, which will be breeding in the rivers.
Yeah, and increasingly rare species as
well.
Especially, you know, a hot topic has been pollution. But actually, when rivers start in places like this, especially in northern Scotland, actually it's quite lucky because this is a filtration system as well, isn't it?
It is. The water that comes out of peatland systems is really, really high quality. And that's one of the reasons. Scottish water, I think everyone knows, it tastes amazing. And half that is because of systems such as this blanket bog.
People have a conception of a river as a channel of water flowing through a landscape, but that's really too simplistic. Rivers are connected longitudinally, top to bottom. They're connected laterally. And naturally, they should be connected to a whole continuum of wetlands right up to the break of slope. And they're connected vertically as well. There's a lot of water flowing underneath the ground, below the river. What we see is just a surface blip, like the tip of an iceberg of physical, chemical and ecological processes. So rivers are kind of three-dimensional dynamic beasts in their natural state, not just these simple blue lines on maps.
Dr. Mark Everard is an author, an environmental scientist and an expert on rivers.
Most of the water in the landscape is invisible. It's either there as soil moisture or in biological matter, but much of it is deep underground. And it's important to think of that water in the way we conceptualize rivers, the way we manage rivers, because you take too much of that water out and you starve the river before it's even born. Many of the low-flow rivers that we have in this country, particularly those that dry up in droughts, are consequent from over-abstraction from this invisible water before it even gets to the river.
We asked Mark to explain exactly where and what the source of a river is.
We might think of it as a discrete spring, like the one at the Thames Head pub, not so far from where I live. But of course, all river systems have multiple tributaries and they're distributed across landscapes. The Upper Thames itself is a winterborne, which means that when the water table is high, the groundwater is high, it flows from a completely different place to where it starts in the summer. I mean, miles downstream. So actually the source is often deep underground. So when water companies abstract water from the ground, they change the structure and the source and the location of the headwaters. Also, when we farm land inappropriately, we can decrease the permeability of landscapes. And that changes the pace and the rate of runoff into the river. And we're seeing fairly major damages in some rivers like the Usk and the Wye, where more intensive sheep stocking over the winter is just changing the headwater quality, location and ecology. In other of my work in the desert in Rajasthan of India, for example, I work with people to recharge their wells and their rivers in places where the water falls and percolates that might be a very long way away from where the head of the river is. So the source of the river is obviously the clouds, but also the management of wide landscapes that nourish where the water bubbles through to the surface.
I always love the journey of a river and kind of following it as it meanders through a landscape. And actually coming to the source of rivers, like right where they begin, is in some ways the most interesting, because obviously by the time it gets to kind of the mouth where it flows out into the sea, it's this huge expanse. But to see it in its intricacy and its infant stages is really amazing, and it's incredible that it starts off in places just like this.
Exactly. So when you have a healthy blanket bog system, the rain falls and it's absorbed by the peatlands and it flows through the streams and into the rivers. And as the water is absorbed by the peatlands, because it's slowed right down, that helps flood prevention. So in areas where you have healthy blanket bogs, you have a really good system against flooding.
I mean, Scotland's known for its precipitation levels, the amount of rain, I mean, which is ultimately what creates something like a blanket bog, isn't it? It has to have high rainfall and a certain level of acidity.
Yep, that's it. So it forms over a long, long time where vegetation matter doesn't fully decompose. So the rain falls down, creating this waterlogged anaerobic environment, and so because of that, the vegetation only partially decomposes and instead forms layers of peat. The rate at which it forms here, 1 millimetre per year, it means that over the 10,000 years or so that we've had the correct climate, so it's been very cold, very wet, the flatness of this landscape has contributed to it as well. And up here in the flow country, we store a huge amount of carbon. It's three times the amount of carbon that is stored in all of Britain's woodlands, which is an incredible feat. If you think about how much time we spend praising woodlands, and rightly so, they're an incredible habitat, but I think peatlands deserve their moment for how important they are as well.
Absolutely. Isn't it 3% of global cover is peatland?
3% of terrestrial land area, 30% of land carbon is stored in peatlands.
Insane.
So they are incredibly good at storing carbon.
It's one of the many reasons why this landscape is so crucial, but often kind of forgotten about in many ways.
It is. It's a place a lot of people might look out and not think there's really anything here to explore. It takes a little bit of time sometimes to understand how special the blanket bog is, but actually you just need to get a closer look. Peatlands are amazing for biodiversity, so lots of the plants are specialised to live here. So we have things like sundew and butterwort, which are insectivorous, mm-hmm. So they trap dragonflies and damselflies and midges within their sticky hairs.
Let's have a look down. Look down here, because I mean, even within the space of like 10 centimetres, you're seeing almost like a miniature forest of different species of plants.
One of the really important plants that we find here, which we can see beneath us just now, is the sphagnum mosses. They love it here. They keep it nice and wet and boggy and acidic. And they helped create little microbiomes as well. So they might be found in the pools or on the edges of pools, or creating hummocks, which then bird species like golden plover will sit and rest on and call out from. Throughout the year, they change colour like the trees do, and it's almost like we call it a mini autumn sometimes when they start turning red into the autumn season.
Okay, so we've got a mini rainforest right by our feet. Should we have a little bit of a look further on?
Yeah.
So this one's quite red. The one we were looking at before was very green, wasn't it? And this is drier as well.
It's drier. This is one of the species, Capifolium, that will form hummocks. And so you get these little mini microbiomes forming on the hummocks. And something really incredible that I learned recently was that birds like golden plover will like to rest and call on the top of these hummocks. And as they poo, they then fertilise the ground and create a bigger, better hummock for them to continue resting on, which I think is amazing.
Well, it's got these patches of fertilised soil.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Which, in a landscape like this, is actually quite rare. Quite a valuable resource. Right, what else?
So there is a bog pool system straight in front of us, which we can't see yet, but it's really... But that's the way it kind of happens, like you don't know it's there until you're right on top of it. Let me see if I can find you a bit of bouncing bog.
Bouncing bog.
Bouncing bog. So because it is so waterlogged underneath, there is so much water and liquid in this landscape, when you find the right bit, you can jump up and down and you can see the waves under the bog. It's a pretty incredible feeling. It's like a trampoline.
A trampoline.
Or like...
like a waterbed.
Like a waterbed.
If anyone still has any of those anymore,
yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly. And you can see the movement of water underneath as you move.
Let's give that a go. Where do you think is a good spot?
Over just here. I think we might be able to get it.
Oh, look, you can see it.
So you can see as I jump up and down.
You do. It does wobble.
Yeah, here we go. See?
Wow.
And that's a pretty amazing feeling of actually how fluid this landscape actually is.
This is precarious because this bit's really thin. So if I fall in, you'll hit. Oh, look how big that is! Just like rocking it. Oh, that's quite fun.
And we can feel that. I'm about 2 meters away from you, and I can feel your movements under my feet as well.
Oh, it's quite a good workout. You can feel the thighs start to burn after doing that. I should say at this point that if you want to visit a bog,
please make sure you always stick to the marked trails. And don't try bouncing without an experienced guide like Millie, who knows the depth of water, as it's easy to quickly sink into a bog.
I guess over seasons, this landscape's going to change quite dramatically. More flowers might emerge, for example, like bog bean.
Completely, yeah, bog bean. Oh, I love them. They're one of the most exciting things to crop up in the bog pools in the heat of summer. And then they have the most beautiful, white, delicate flowers that crop up only for a few weeks. They have a really short flowering period. But yeah, like you mentioned, in the summer, it's bursting with life. There's birds everywhere. You can hear the skylarks singing their songs. You see the hen harriers and the merlins in the sky, and all of the really important breeding waders here as well. So we have greenshank and dunlin and golden plover, all of which are species which aren't very easy to find. But when you do, it is such a reward to hear them calling.
Is that one of the reasons why you fell in love with this habitat?
It is, yeah. I think, like a lot of other people, I didn't appreciate blanket bogs or peatlands in general for a long time, because you look out and you think, oh, there's not really anything there. Like, why would I go to this place, you know? But it's just one of the completely hidden treasures of Scotland. And once you come here, I think you fall in love with it. And the more time you spend here, the more it gives you. So I feel very lucky to work here.
No, it's an amazing place, even just being here for 5 minutes. I kind of want to immerse myself in it and just, I wish I had a snorkel. Put my head in a pool. I mean, I'd be really cold, but I think it'd be worth it.
You can't really see under the water often, but you can listen and hear. So it sort of reveals this very mysterious soundscape, and you're not really sure what's making the sound, but it's very fascinating.
The artist Kathy Hind hasn't put her head in a pool, but she has done the next best thing and put her microphone down there.
I had this sort of fascination with thinking, well, we can listen at different depths in the bog. And when you listen at different depths, you're actually listening back in time almost, because, you know, 1 millimetre of peat will form in a year, so, and it's 10 metres deep in some parts of the flow country. So that's just 10,000 years of peat formation. So, yeah, I've been making work about our relationship with water for many years. All the water in the world is connected, and there's so many amazing metaphors when you start thinking about water and the more than human world and our relationship with that, and that we're made of 60% water as well.
In 2019, Kathy was asked to make some work for something called Below the Blanket.
It was a show produced in 2019 by the art house Cryptic, based in Glasgow, creatively directed by Kathy Boyd. And she commissioned a series of artists to respond creatively to the incredible landscape in the Flow Country in the north of Scotland. Different parts of the bog sound different. So when you go in a very soggy, wet area of the bog, then you will get, I mean, if you're in a watery, like a bog pool, you will have some invertebrates in there and some life in there. And a lot of underwater sound calls from invertebrates will be kind of clicking and popping and scratching and very sort of percussive sounds.
This environment, Millie, is very different than the one we were just standing in.
It is. I mean, there's bits of deadwood everywhere. It's a complete brash surface, and all of this is the remains of...
Wait, here you go, look at that. Coming in.
Amazing.
Look at that.
At this point, I got extremely excited at the sight of a white-tailed eagle swooping overhead.
Flying barn doors. We've been given that name for a reason. Okay, well, eyes peeled if it comes back.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. But no, this landscape is incredibly different, isn't it? Because you've got tufts of quite rough sedges and grasses. We stood on this dead wood field, if anything, and it seems pretty devoid of life and of water, actually.
It is. So that's one of the main things that when these forestry plantations were put in, they had to drain away a lot of the water. And that water, as we know, is what makes the blanket bog so special. During the 70s and 80s, big tax breaks meant that people would buy up land in the Flow Country and plant large areas of non-native conifers here. Mm. So mostly Sitka spruce and lodgepole pine. And that has just completely decimated the landscape and the bog that they have been planted on. They've had to plough up large areas, put in drainage ditches, and then they have put these non-native trees on top of the bog. And as you can probably guess, that is, yeah, not been a good process for the bog, the species that live here. So we are in the process, a lot of our work here is trying to restore those areas that were planted.
Non-native plantations can be quite damaging, generally speaking anyway, especially, you know, they're lacking in biodiversity, they're a monoculture, essentially. And to put them on something like a blanket bog, something as important as a blanket bog, it's just madness. Is that one of the main threats that they faced?
There are quite a lot of threats to bogs. Forestry is one of the big ones. Drainage ditches in general. So usually these have been put in to try and drain away some of the water for agriculture, development, overgrazing, and whether that's from livestock, so putting too many cattle or sheep on areas of peatland, and also things like deer can be a big problem. We know that in Scotland we have way too many deer than what's actually sustainable for the landscape. So all of these things can be pretty damaging.
How long will this take to return back to its natural state as a bog?
A long, long time. The research is still being done to know exactly when that process will be complete, or as complete as it can be. We want to return these previously forested areas to as near natural as they can be. But it's a long time. I mean, all of this was done in a kind of time span of 5 to 10 years. And it'll be probably to the end of my lifespan until it's really there. So 50 years or so until we're seeing the true benefits. But even once we take the trees down, we start to see the vegetation coming back as we raise the water level back. And with the vegetation, then comes the invertebrates, and then comes the other species as well, the mammals and the birds. But it's a very long process.
Well, I can't wait. Maybe in 30, 40 years' time, we'll both come back here and stand in the same spot, and my feet will be squelching with the sound of sphagnum moss underfoot and something
That's
like that.
It. Most wonderful sound.
Okay, this time in 40 years?
Yeah, I'll see you here.
Okay, I'll see you here. Yeah, put it in the diary.
Joking aside, the work of restoring the bog is so important. For the bog, the mosses, the insects and the birds, as well as for the rivers that flow out of this incredibly unique place. Here's Cathy Hind again, to play us out with her beautiful ode to the Flow Country, Skylark Walk.
So I'm really keen bird watcher whenever I can, so it's just really exciting to be in the Flow Country because there's loads of really rare bird species you might not normally see or hear. The sense of scale is really interesting because you can look at the mosses and you have to look really closely and, you know, really magnify things. And then you look out into the distance and it seems like it's just completely flat and goes on forever. And so you don't often see the birds. A lot of them are either really high in the sky or ground dwelling. So I had some very early mornings going out in the mist and the fog, and it's just, it was so atmospheric. And I could hear the sound of the snipe, which is a really interesting sound. In fact, I didn't realise it was a bird to start with. I was very confused because it kind of goes, and it's not doing the call like a bird would call. It's actually got these incredible tail feathers that are stiff, and it does a special kind of dive, and the tail feathers vibrate and then make that sound. And then I could also hear the golden plover, which is quite rare, but you do hear them at the Flow Country. So I was thrilled to hear my first golden plover when I was there. And of course, there were a lot of skylarks, which I really love the sound of the skylark. It's very continuous, tweety, bubbling kind of sound. So it was really amazing because I had all these birdsong recordings and I wasn't sure exactly what to do with them. And Cathy Boyd, who was creatively directing the show at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Edinburgh, had this idea for a soundscape that would be listened to under umbrellas. And I just thought, oh, that's so perfect. So I made a composition called Skylark Walk. And at the very end of the show in the Botanic Gardens, people were handed an umbrella. It was at dusk, and at the point where they got to the end of the show, it was generally a little bit darker. And then a tiny little speaker in the top of the umbrella, and they could have this little personalised soundscape that just took them through that pathway out at the end of the show. And that was a combination of the birdsong recordings that I made and some really sparse piano composition.
For more information on rivers and for fascinating nature stories, sign up for emails at wwt.org.uk or follow WWT on our socials. Waterlands is an 1860 production for WWT. The producer is Ellie Richold. Thank you.
I just love it. I think it's lovely. If you enjoyed it too, you can find more from Waterlands by searching for it right here in your podcast app. And don't forget to come back here next week for another great podcast. You can find all my recommendations along with news, reviews and much more on Podcast Rex at www.podcastrex.com. That's www.podcastrex.com.